You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Michael Jacobson. He's talking to me from Minneapolis. Michael, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Brainerd.
Michael, I imagine we're going to talk about epistemic writing and discuss that, but before I ask you that, what are you working on now? If you're working on more than one project, let me know, or if it's just epistemic writing, tell me, what are you working on?
Well, at the moment, I'm currently focused on my press that I started publishing books of epistemic writing about a year ago. And so far, I have 6 books out, and I have a 7th coming out this summer from an author from Minneapolis named Jefferson Hansen.
And that's the main project you're working on. I mean, will we discuss anything else today?
Yeah, I make art and epistemic writing almost every day, and I host most of it on my Ello page, ELLO. Hmm. Which is sort of like, it's kind of like Pinterest, but it's for artists to share and show their work. So.
Right, and also that works well for GIFs, which your art tends towards online.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, all my recent work has been GIFs, animated GIFs. I make some with the epistemic writing, some without. I do science fiction GIFs and. And to me it's like I glitch them and I do all kinds of different things with them.
So let's start at the beginning. How did you first, I want to talk about the press, of course, and the writers that you're involved in, but how did you get involved in epistemic writing and understand what it is? Because I'd like to also define it.
Well, I started making alien writing when I was a teenager just to label my tapes and stuff of my music that I would create. And there wasn't really any meaning behind the symbols. I just made them just for the heck of it. And
so just to be clear, those symbols you were writing on tapes or cassettes, these were kind of what you call alien writing, but they're symbols that can't be read by other people. Though
yeah.
I imagine they have a meaning to you, so you could say, oh, yeah, that's the tape of such and such.
Yeah, exactly. I was involved with, I was going to, let me think. I don't know. Let me start over that question.
Okay, I'll ask it again. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in epistemic handwriting and when that first began.
In high school, I started painting abstract artworks on canvas, and I also would write song lyrics for the band I was in. And then eventually, over time, I kind of combined the two with my painting, my abstract painting, and then my my verbal writing. I combine the two, and then it kind of snowballed from there. I created my first epistemic novella, The Giant's Fence, in about.
And tell me a little bit about that. So let's talk about that novella and how you approached it, because it's epistemic handwriting, as I understand it, and I'm learning about it and researching about you before this interview, but it's a visual language, so to speak, that's not translatable or even necessarily consistent. Yeah, I mean, help me with that.
Yeah, I do think it is translatable. I think anybody can kind of come up with their own translation. It's like the meaning isn't fixed. It's I describe it as a wordless, open semantic form of writing. So, kind of like abstract art, but instead of abstract art, it's abstract writing.
When there's never any recognizable letter forms in it. Isn't that one aspect of it?
Yeah, it's kind of made to look almost exotic, but it's not really. It's just, I don't know, plain. I mean, it's, to me, it's the, everything. I don't know. I better start this one again, too.
Okay. So
I've only been interviewed live twice before, so I'm kind of stumbling a little bit, but
that's okay. So let me just ask the question this way. Tell me about the novella. How did you begin that and approach that, and why call it a novella? Can you tell me a little bit about that book?
I call it a novella because it does tell my story in an abstract way. I was dating this girl around the time when I created the Giant's Fence, and we would both create symbols and things, and I kind of just, I don't know. I mean, I've been making up symbols for a long time, and the Giant's Fence, I kind of put every single symbol I could think of together into one book, and that's how it ends. So
symbols, that's really interesting. So symbols, instead of it being kind of linear, almost like right to left or left to right, and lines, you're talking about that each page of the book was a symbol in itself.
Like
a pictogram or something.
Yeah, it's almost like writing for its own sake instead of writing to reproduce, like, phonemes, I think is the correct term linguistically for it. It's kind of like writing that's, I don't know.
Well, tell me about the, I know it's a hard thing to describe. Tell me about your press. How do you choose writers for the press? And maybe tell me about a few people that have been published by your press.
So far, I started the press about a year ago, and so far I've published 6 books. I have a 7th one coming out next month. Did a book with Rosera Pell. You interviewed her a while ago, and I published her book, Zinc Zank Zunk. It's an acemic conjugation. And I published Spencer Selby. He was a well-known poet. He died recently, unfortunately. Oliver Mayo, he's a poet from Cambridge, England. And let me see, who else? Annika Baton, she's an artist from Australia. And Vladimir Bilic, he's an artist from the Ukraine. And I've just known these people for years over the internet. I've never met any of them in person. So you
approach them and they produce a book for you. Are they people who have already seen their work as aesthetic writing, or is that something that happens when you approach them?
Yeah, most of the time they have a project ready to go. The latest book that's coming out, the one by Jefferson Hansen, it's called 100 Hybrids. And that book, I hang out and get beers with him every once in a while, and we started talking about him doing a book of acemic writing, and so he came out together with a manuscript of 100 hybrid acemic writing works. So they have both acemic writing mixed with conventional poetry.
And it's really interesting. I mean, it seems that, you know, some things you could almost say are acemic writing. Like, is an artist like Cy Twombly someone who could be seen as an acemic writer, or other artists, you know, maybe even Jackson Pollock, all kinds of artists that use kind of scratchings and what almost looks like, you know, the line of handwriting.
Yeah, Cy Twombly is a big influence on acemic writing. Let me see of others. Xu Bing, Henri Michaux, Mirtha Demirsach. Yeah,
and these people, did they see themselves as acemic writers? Did Cy Twombly understand that? Do you know and recognize that?
I don't know if Cy Twombly, he died a few years ago. I don't know if he had heard the word at the time, but it's pretty widespread now because of Wikipedia and the internet and various blogs and the Facebook acemic writing group.
And so you're an artist and a writer and a publisher. All of these things are kind of coming together under acemic writing, right? It seems like it's a form that brought your visual sensibility in writing, and a number of things came together.
Yeah, it's all coming together right now. It's I don't know what to say. I mean, it's
a combination of your interest, though, and talents is what I'm saying. It's as opposed to, you know, only painting or making symbols or writing. It seems like a form that blends all of that in some way.
Yeah, I kind of when I used to make abstract paintings, I would also create poetry, and I kind of just combined the two after a while, and that's how I ended up coming up with my own interpretation of what acemic writing is. So.
And how do you publish? How does the press work? Is this like offset? You assemble it and you create a small edition that's print on demand, or do you print it yourself? How does the press actually work?
Yeah, everything's print on demand. That way, I don't have to have inventory laying around getting eaten by rats or whatever. I can just when I need a copy, I can just order one off the internet and so can anyone else living in any of the countries that have Amazon, because that's where I distribute most of the titles. So
let's talk a little bit about an anthology of acemic writing. Tell me a little bit about that book, because there you're talking about the whole community of writers, right? This is a book that is not a book of acemic writing, although there's some in it, but it's also writing about acemic writing. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a compilation of about 100 acemic writers that not everybody is contemporary. We go back in time to Zhang Zhu and other Henri Michaux. We included a bunch of different people, both the modern and from where acemic writing has kind of come from too. So,
and where has it come from? Essentially, unless you've gone over that, where do you think its origins are?
Well, probably proto writing, which is the earliest forms of writing, like the Vinca symbols or the oracle bone engravings in China. A lot of acemic writers kind of look backwards in time to the first origins of writing, whether it's cave paintings or whatever, rock art, symbols. Yeah, like the Giant's Fence is basically, it's a big store where I store these symbols that I've invented or discovered, or I collect them and I just present them in a book and, yeah, let people take it from there and interpret it.
And in some ways, children's drawings could be also construed as acemic handwriting, couldn't they?
Oh, yeah. I have two daughters, and I've had my daughter's work on my blog, so the new Post Literate. So
right, I would think, and there'll be links to all of these things in the interview, the blog, and the Facebook page, and all of that. So I would think, in a way, that's a great inspiration. I also have a son, and just visually, what they do is kind of fascinating. But in terms of acemic writing, it seems that it's right on target, because they're especially first, you know, movements with a pen or crayon or marker or anything is acemic writing. It's a form of that, I would assume.
Yeah, I kind of think of acemic writing as kind of scribbling for adults in a way. So
I like that. Yeah, that makes sense. And to step back from all of this, what else is happening in your life? Are you also working other jobs? Is there funding for acemic writing, or it's all self-funded? What else is happening in your life, if I can ask?
It's pretty much self-funded. An exception was the show at the Minnesota Center for Book Arts last year. It was called Acemic Writing Offline and in the Gallery. I curated it, and I actually had a budget for that, so that was kind of nice.
And are you also teaching or doing other kinds of work besides
that? Right now I'm a stay-at-home dad, and I'm just working on my writing and artwork. And
so what's coming up in terms of your writing? Is there, you're continuing the acemic writing, the blog, the group, is there another book you want to publish similar to the anthology, or any other projects that you'd like to complete in the future?
I'm just trying to work on the press right now. So I'm trying to get my own work out through my press too. My book is called Works and Interviews, and it's a collection of a few of my books and then 8 interviews that I've done. And it was the first book I put out, and then I kind of used it as an anchor for the rest of the press. So.
And it seems that there's a few forms that these exist in, right? There's on paper, which is largely the press, right? We're talking about paper reproduction. And then there's, you know, your blog and other online works, which is GIFs, and GIFs really can only be seen online, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's other forms, but in terms of getting your work out there, there's how it appears online, there's how it appears in books, and then there's, of course, visual work, paintings, work on paper could hang in galleries. So there's really kind of three forms, unless I'm missing one, that your work gets out into the world.
Yeah, one thing that we've been doing for the various shows of acemic writing is to keep costs down. We just collect works over the internet and then we print them off and show them in galleries instead of actually having to ship artwork around. So it makes it a lot less expensive to do a show. And we can get people from all over the world involved in it, too. So.
And you always search for those people, or do you have open calls to artists? Is it something that artists can...
Yeah, the show at the Book Arts Center last year, I didn't do an open call. I just took works from my personal collection and the general group of people that I know. So...
Well, it's great talking about this, and I wish you good luck with the press and the future of this. Before we go, I wanted to ask you what you're reading right now.
Okay, right now I'm reading the Voynich manuscript.
And what is the Voynich manuscript?
It's in the Yale Library. It's manuscript 408. It's a book of a secret code that nobody can read, and it's kind of, made everyone crazy trying to figure it out. So,
and who wrote it? What's its origin? I don't know anything about that.
Nobody knows exactly. I mean, I have my own theory of who wrote it, but yeah.
And what's your theory?
The Dominican friar Annius da Viterbo. He was an Italian Renaissance art hoax creator. He made a bunch of different fabrications, and like he would plant sculptures in the ground and say he found them and discovered them, and he would write books that were said to be about antiquity but were actually his own invention, so they were more like novels.
That's fascinating. I'm so glad you mentioned that book. And how do you read that book? Is it online or how do you have a copy
of
it?
Yeah, it's online. If you go to the Wikipedia page, there will be links to it on the Voynich manuscript. So,
well, Michael, yeah. I want to thank you for talking with me today. I really enjoyed talking about your work.
Okay, thanks, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.